On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, it is a trade deadline extravaganza. We run through all 29 teams and the Rockies to tell you what they will, won't, might, should, could do at the trade deadline. That is just 1 week away. We also have Robert Murray of FanSided on, the newsbreaker, heart taker, dream maker. He's going to tell us everything that he knows and more as the buzz accumulates around this beautiful midsummer trade season. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who thinks that every single trade should be announced by the town crier. I'm Jake Mitz. That's Jordan Schusterman. Can you imagine? No tweets, no alerts on your phone. You just walk into your local main street and a person on a box with a large scroll just goes, hear ye, Gino Suarez is a Yankee.
I would love that. I think that the small Ohio town where I live in is honestly perfect for this. We've got kind of like a town square situation. Like, we've got a perfect meeting spot for someone to come, you know, tell me that Seth Lugo has been dealt to the Blue Jays. Like, that would be awesome. I think it'd be a little bit more complicated in New York City to know exactly where everybody should gather for the
need a lot of town criers.
You would need a lot of them all over, but I love this idea, and maybe we can make it happen. We've got the trade deadline coming up a week from tomorrow, and this is going to be a trade deadline heavy episode of Baseball Barbacast.
You know who would hate my dumb idea is our guest on today's episode, Big Bob Murray, Robert Murray, who makes a living and a life off of breaking news, which he did very recently, breaking the Rafi Devers deal. You can follow Big Bob at Robert Murray. He's writing for FanSided. He's, I would say, of the newsbreakers our age, he does a pretty dang good job. So he's going to come on and share some knowledge, share some rumors, maybe even break a trade or two on the air. Probably not.
Maybe if we're lucky, and I think we're the only people that call him Big Bob, but we're just going to keep doing that because Robert is one of our favorites. So we're going to talk to him later. But this is going to be a deadline heavy episode. We are going to go league by league. We're going to talk about the AL before we bring on Robert Murray. We'll talk about the NL after that. But before we do that, and we'll explain kind of the structure of how we're going to do this conversation with. Just a little over a week to go before we get to the trade deadline. Let us remind you that once we get there, 6 p.m. on July 31st is the deadline, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday the 31st, a week from tomorrow. We will be doing a live trade deadline show on YouTube. You will be able to watch us react at the last second when Phil Maton, gets dealt at 5:58. You're going to watch us freak out about it. Live on here, Baseball Barbacast. That will be a very special edition. I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, the deadline is at 6, and your deadline to watch us talk about the deadline is at 5:30.
Yes, so we hope you join us. We will continue to promote that in the days leading up to it, but we have to set the stage first. Now, a year ago when we previewed the trade deadline, we did it immediately after All-Star. That Friday after we got home from Texas, we were like, all right, we're in deadline mode. And it is true. That is kind of the rhythm of the season. Once you get past All-Star, you start getting into deadline mode. But the reality is, because all of our favorite Pobos are the ultimate procrastinators, and because the playoff field has been expanded, these teams wait as long as possible to actually start making deals, which means we had a little bit more time before we got to go full deadline mode. But here we are in this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbacast, and we are going to do it. So how are we going to structure this conversation? We are going to use our good friends at Fangraphs. Of course, I'm drinking out of my Fangraphs mug on this fine Wednesday morning. They gave us the playoff odds. They do it. These are the playoff odds we reference often. And those are going to be kind of how we structure this conversation, going from first to worst, the teams who have the best chances of being in October to the teams who have already planned their vacations. That is going to kind of give us the structure for which teams we expect to be buyers. There is a messy middle in both leagues. And then, of course, the teams we expect to be sellers. So, Jake, I know you wrote a very, very comprehensive kind of breakdown of all 30 teams at Yahoo. I wrote a little bit about some of the most glaring needs for contenders earlier this week. You can go check that out. But where would you like to begin this conversation? I think we are going to start in the American League.
Let's begin at the top with the Detroit Tigers, who currently have the best record in the American League at 60-42. They're kind of a different character than the rest of the contenders in the American League: Houston, New York, Toronto, Boston, Seattle. Just because we have never seen this Tigers regime act aggressively. Now, they have only really been in full win mode for what? One offseason? Remember, they traded Jack Flaherty at the deadline last year. This is a team that was not expecting to make the playoffs in 2024. They did anyway. And so part of the reason they're a little separate is just we have never seen them go all in. Now, that doesn't mean they shouldn't. This is a team that is very well situated to add to its roster with a deep, impressive farm system full of pieces the teams are going to want. And they have needs. They have needs, particularly at the back of the bullpen. Their heroic run in 2024 was built in a large part on that bullpen and the interchangeable pitching chaos that manager AJ Hinch deploys. They don't have the same level of pen in 2025. Now, thankfully, there are a number of high-end relievers out there in the market that they can go out and acquire. The question is, are they willing to be dumb to go get one of those big arms?
Yeah, and right. The pitching chaos has kind of taken on a new meaning this year, as it is just not nearly, besides Skubal, where it's just essentially, you know, automatic victory or close to
we
it.
We win today.
And credit to Casey Mize, too, also an all-star. Like, I don't think we've given him enough credit as far as someone who was not at all a character last year in terms of kind of stabilizing this rotation. Flaherty's been fine. Reese Olson is totally solid. But the bullpen, besides Will Vest, who has kind of carried that momentum from his real breakout last October, all these other guys that we saw last year have just been a little bit worse, right? That's Tyler Holton. That's, you know, Brendan Hanafy and Brant Herter. And they bring in Tommy Cainley, and he's helped a little bit, but hasn't necessarily stabilized things. So they're clearly still a few arms short. And like you said, they have the pieces to go get relievers. And even if it's just rentals, I think that that would be a good idea. But we just don't know how aggressive they're willing to be. On one hand, you could say, well, the Tigers have the biggest cushion in baseball. They're going to win this division even if they continue to play like crap, which they have over the last couple of weeks. Or they have the highest, you know, playoff odds. Or what I'm saying is, this is it, man. The window's right here. Like, the American League might never be this weak again. And I hope that that motivates Scott Harris and co. to really push. What exactly that piece is? Is it, you know, Ryan Helsley? Is it, it's hard to imagine them trading in division for like a Class A or a Duran, but there are other closers out there, Pete Fairbanks, stuff like that. Maybe they could go after. And maybe there is a place they could fit a bat into this lineup too, because there's still, it's still not necessarily a lineup that terrifies you 1-9.
They are 1-8 in their last nine. We are hoping that this Schneid scares Pobo Scott Harris enough into acting proactively at the deadline to improve his ball club. Anything else about the Tigers before we move on?
No, let's open it up to the teams that we are very confident are going to be aggressive. Now, that doesn't mean that all of these teams are going to be able to swing massive deals, but they are certainly going to try. And you alluded to them earlier. That is the division leaders, the other division leaders, Houston in the AL West, Toronto in the AL East, and then the Yankees, who are, except for that one time where they like only traded for Joe Harvey. besides that, that was a great man. That tweet will always, sorry, that's so random, but I just always think about that when we assume the Yankees are going to do something big. And then Seattle, who I think, DePoto, who has made big moves each of the last few years, in some cases that even includes like trading Paul Sewald away and pissing off a lot of people, or trading Kendall Graven away and pissing off a lot of people, or bringing in Luis Castillo, Randy Arozarena. So Mariners, considering where they are in a playoff spot, still chasing down Houston, they have this historic season from Cal Raleigh. These are the teams we expect, without a doubt, will be attempting aggressively to add.
I have the tweet in front of me. It's a, just a great tweet. This is July 31st, 2019. The Yankees have acquired left-handed pitcher Alfredo Garcia from the Colorado Rockies.
They traded Joe Harvey away.
Right-handed pitcher Joseph Harvey. And all the replies are, delete your account. You've already failed. Cashman, what a joke. Are you kidding me? Don't even tweet this. This ended up being pretty true. Like, the Yankees went to the ALCS that year and needed more pieces than they had and lost to the Astros. And let's start with those Astros, who are currently five games up in the AL West. Big game last night, winning over the Diamondbacks. 95% playoff odds. We've said this before. This Astros team has gotten to this point in a very wonky roundabout way. Half their roster is on the injured list. Yordan Alvarez has been hurt. Jose Altuve has been better over the last month, but has not been Jose Altuve. And yet, here are the Houston Astros. Get them. Win the division. Make the playoffs again. You know, Alex Bregman once said, I guess we'll never, you know, they said what would happen if the Astros didn't make the, didn't win the division. I guess we'll never know. Alex Bregman's not even there anymore to say that, and they're probably still going to win. Now, that puts them in a very odd spot, right? Because of all of these injuries, when are they going to get certain players back? How long is Alvarez going to be out? How long is Jeremy Peña going to be out? Isak Paredes, the third base all-star, it looks like he has a hamstring issue to honor, I guess, Alex Bregman. He's going to be out for a significant stretch. And so depending on those timelines is going to determine if they need to add to the offensive mix or if they're just going to add to the rotation. It's such a ridiculous hodgepodge right now. Friends of the program, Taylor Trammell, Zach Short, getting tons of at-bats at the bottom of this lineup. Cooper Hummel, who looks like a pitcher trying to hit. You got Victor Caratini in the three-hole. Christian Walker has just been a catastrophic signing. It's just a weird vibe down there at Daikin Park. And yet, we think they're going to be aggressive because they usually are under Dana Brown.
Yeah, that said, and Christian Walker has finally started to look a little bit better lately, although it was really bad for the first few months. I think that we often laugh at the teams that have injuries and they're like, oh, well, we get them back. That's our deadline acquisition. But in the case of the Astros, where literally half the team is on the injured list, they're now up to 17 players on the IL, including nine hitters. It does become a little bit more difficult to know where to add when you do have so many everyday players you're expecting to get back. Where does that playing time go? Now, again, that doesn't mean you shouldn't try to get someone to help you right now if a lot of these guys are going to be out for most of August. But if they're looking at their 95% playoff odds and said, you know, Mariners can't catch us anyway, it doesn't matter, let's just get healthy and then ride. All that said, I do think it makes it more likely that they add pitching in some form than trying to squeeze in some sort of position player. I mean, I just wrote about how they need a left-handed hitter because without Yordan, they just don't have any. And we don't know when Yordan's going to be back. They have switch hitters, Caratini and Hummel, and Taylor Trammell is now there. Jonathan Singleton's somehow back. But like they just don't have left-handed hitters. So that would seem like something like Ryan O'Hearn would be a fit there. Maybe an outfielder like a Cedric Mullins. I don't know, but I do think it's way more likely that they try to add a starter, kind of like they did last year with Kikuchi.
And that's not something that's necessarily going to get better, the left-handed hitting stuff, because Yordan's the only one who's an impact bat, who's on the IL, who's lefty, right? Peña's righty. Jake Myers, who's had a great year so far, he's righty, so is Paredes. So I think you're right. I think a left-handed bat would help them. But remember, last year we thought they would just kind of stand pat, and they went out and shocked the world and added Yusei Kikuchi and paid a lot for him, and he was great. And that trade looks a little bit better now than it did back then. All right, let's move on to the other division leader, the Toronto Blue Jays, who did lose last night to the Yankees, had a chance to push that lead in the division up to five instead of dwindled down to three. Playoff odds stay at 92%. And their needs for this deadline, well, they're pretty straightforward. They need a person who you can give the ball to in a playoff game and sleep well the night before.
Yeah, and it is weird because they have these four very accomplished veteran right-handed pitchers. Barrios, Gausman, Bassett are all kind of in that same tier. Scherzer is the ultimate wild card. I mean, listen, whatever they're going to get out of him.
Not a wild card. That implies upside to me.
I mean, I think there's still some upside. And again, I do not expect him to start a postseason game. That's why we're about to talk about how they need to get a starting pitcher. The point is he's at least back pitching. He's in the rotation again. But Bassett, Gonsolin, and Berríos, they basically alternate. Like, those are all awesome regular season pitchers to have to kind of get you through a season. And on the right day, any of them can look like, oh, yeah, I'd give that guy the ball in game two. Gosman, I think, still has the highest ceiling pretty clearly. I think we saw that the other day against the Yankees. But I still think, and especially with the age, and this is also looking forward. I know this year is paramount, but this is also a rotation because of the age, because of, you know, Bassett reaching free agency, Gosman after next year. They're going to have to start getting some more starters in here at some point too. So that's why they are a very interesting candidate to go after a Sandy Alcantara, to go after a Mitch Keller, to go after a starter with multiple years of control. Do they have the farm system to do it? I don't know. Their farm has gotten better, but it is still, I think, comfortably in the bottom 10. So unless they're willing to part with the top guys, I don't know if they're going to be able to put together a good enough package. All that said, the opportunity is here. The AL East is weaker. Go out, go for it. Like, this has been a really, really fun season for Toronto, and I hope that they act accordingly.
And the unfortunate thing for them is that most of the arms on the market, as far as starters go, are right-handed. And they could really use a left-handed reliable starting pitcher, kind of break up those top four guys, Berríos, Gosman, Scherzer, Bassett, who are already. So who do they go and get? It could be Seth Lugo. It could be a Zach Gallen. Anybody kind of towards the top of the rental market, I think, is in play for the Blue Jays. Let's stay in the AL East and go over to the Yankees, who always do stuff except for Joe Harvey, 2019. Never forget. There is no more glaring need amongst contenders than the Yankees' third base situation. It has gotten even more dire and desperate in recent days as Oswald Peraza continues to throw the ball not near first base. Poor guy. He needs a hug, a fresh start, and a change of scenery. Like, I need a nap. And yet, the Yankees, here they are, a good team in need of upgrades. The obvious fit is Eugenio Suarez. If you are on Yankees Twitter at all, he's already in pinstripes. The Monument Park monument has been erected. The number's retired. Okay. The beard is, I guess, not shaved. But that feels like the obvious move here for Brian Cashman.
Yeah, it's almost too obvious that if it doesn't happen, it will be considered a failure. Now, there are other third basemen out there. There are some other intriguing, you know, Suarez is the obvious rental piece that they could go after. If they want to cheap out on the rental, you know, Yoan Moncada would also maybe be a fit, who is, again, a flawed player, but I think an upgrade over what they have right now. If they want to go longer term, can they get Ke'Bryan Hayes from Pittsburgh? I mean, he's under contract for a while. Can they get, you know, Ryan McMahon from Colorado? That seems like a fantastic fit if the Rockies are willing to pick up the phone. Seems unlikely. So there are some other options out there. But right now, yeah, I mean, third base. I mean, is it? It's a weird thing, too, because it's like there is a very good version of the Yankees that can still be good with third base being terrible. But recently, enough else has been going bad that we're just so focused on that. And then obviously with Volpe's struggles, the left side of the infield just becomes this, like, how is it this bad for the New York Yankees? But third base has been a problem for years now, right? I mean, with the Donaldson trade not going well, with LeMahieu declining, you had Jazz covering your ass there for a bit. We always knew that was going to be temporary, and now they're just left with not very much. So I'm curious to see. I think that I still also expect them to add pitching, especially in the bullpen. But third base, this is about as glaring of a Yankees need as we've seen in some time. And if they do successfully manage to address it, I'm curious what that looks like.
They are not rolling into October with Oswald Peraza and Yorbit Vivas as a third base platoon. This is not happening. Number one, most bankable deal is the Yankees acquiring a third baseman. Now, do they need a playoff starter? Is a very interesting conversation. Given Clark Schmidt's injury, given Gerrit Cole being out for the year, the playoff rotation right now, would be Fried, Rodon, Will Warren, Marcus Stroman, Cam Schlittler's been nice, but two big league starts. I know Luis Gil is coming off the IL at some point. Is that a guy you would really, really trust in a playoff game? Do we really, like, how dependable is he? That timeline could get pushed back even further. Do you think the Yankees need another guy they could start in a playoff game?
I think they will consider it. I don't know if they 100% are going to make that the priority. I think Luis Gil is absolutely one of the more interesting just pitchers to monitor for the second half and just what he that ends up looking like because of what he was for them last year and because he's coming off injury. So that is definitely a candidate for there's our big deadline acquisition right there. Luis Gil, rookie of the year, baby. So we'll see how to what degree they try to spin that.
But here's the thing about Mr. God Bless Me is that the Yankees didn't really trust him in the playoffs last year. I mean, he started twice, I believe both of the game fours against Cleveland and the Dodgers, and went four innings in each start, was fine against Cleveland, was bad against LA. Yeah. And if that's your four starter, I think you could stomach that. If that's your three starter, yeah, I think that's a little bit more iffy.
That's totally fair. I think it's more likely that Will Warren, or I guess Schlittler, pitches their way into the trust of being a three starter. Now, you can argue whether that's a good idea or not, but that feels more likely than Gil coming back and reclaiming it. Either way, I think it's more likely that they add a third baseman and a reliever than they add an impact starter. But I am prepared to be wrong because I think that the Yankees will act with urgency. Let's talk about the Mariners quickly before we open it up to the messy middle of the American League. And the Mariners have had an interesting run because they have also were dealing with a lot of injuries early on where it seemed like they had some pretty glaring needs on offense. But the reality is they kind of have been hitting really well up and down the lineup since the beginning of June. And I mean, arguably since the end of last year. That I think that pitching is still more of a priority because some of the injuries they've had on the mound. I know that Logan Gilbert and George Kirby are back and Bryce Miller is supposedly coming back. But this bullpen, while it is awesome at the back end with Munoz and Brash and Gabe Spier, it is very thin beyond that. Listen, Eduardo Bizzardo, I love you, man, but don't think we need him pitching in the eighth inning all the time. And I think there should be enough relievers out there to kind of make the bullpen what could be a very clear strength, which it honestly has not been over the last few years. Besides, especially with Brash out last year, this has been kind of a quiet weak spot besides Munoz. So I think adding a reliever is going to be important. Can they add another bat? Third base is another obvious place if they want to upgrade over rookie Ben Williamson, who's providing great defense and very little offensively. A reunion with Suarez would be both perfect and very embarrassing considering they salary dumped him. So that is certainly a storyline to watch. If they have the prospects to get it done, if they get him back, that would be great. It would make them a better team, of course, even though the optics are a little bit goofy. But I expect Jerry DePoto is still in kind of save his job mode. And I think that that is how the Mariners will act. They have been aggressive. They have a great farm system. They will make some interesting trades. I'm quite confident.
I think they could use one more bat, impact bat, and I think they are in a good spot because of where their holes are defensively. To have essentially your three worst hitting positions be DH first and third gives you a lot of room to add bat first players. Now, I know Luke Raley is back. He was terrible at first defensively last night. He's like dropped two balls.
He's not an outfielder by trade. Yeah. So that is something that they've kind of had to talk through and have to convince themselves like, no, Rayleigh's fine because like you want his bat in the lineup. Where does it fit? They have Canzone's been playing well. So I agree with you though. Like in theory, it should give them more flexibility to add a bat of like Ryan O'Hearn would make sense there too, for sure. So we'll see.
Miller, yeah. Let's do the Red Sox really quickly. They're just kind of in their own world here, in my opinion, in the American League especially, because they are the contender most likely to trade off of their big league roster. Okay? The rest of these contenders, my expectation is that they dip into the farm system. Yankees, you know, trade Spencer Jones, the Mariners trade from their assortment of young position player talent at high A, double A. the Red Sox, I think it probably behooves them to trade one of either Jarren Duran or Willy Abreu. Now, will that happen? Probably not in the end. But even after the Devers deal, they are still operating with a crowded situation because Masataka Yoshida is back. That's one. Then you have Sidan Rafaela, Roman Anthony, Jarren Duran, Willy Abreu. That is five players for four spots. And teams,
the Padres,
really covet Duran and Abreu as young, controllable outfielders. The Red Sox could use some impact, controllable starting pitching. Is there deal space?
I almost wonder if they're still going to try and salary dump Yoshida. Obviously, he has the least trade value, but in terms of like what is the best baseball team right now, it's the one that is still finding playing time for Duran and Abreu and Anthony, I think. Now, again, you could still argue it's a better move to just go get a haul for Duran or whatever, or Abreu, but this is a tricky spot. So I know they were playing, obviously they had the W10 going into the break, and then now it's been a little bit more, okay, we'll see. But Boston is, they remain fascinating, and if they do nothing, it will be another few months of consternation about this roster, whether they're winning or not.
Very interesting stretch here for them. They opened the second half with a pretty outrageous stretch. At Cubs, at Phillies, home against the Dodgers. So,
ouch.
Congrats on the W10 heading into the break. Let's now go and fly through the messy middle in the American League, which is just, yeah.
You look, yeah, well, I'm just going to say like, well, first of all, it's good they banked those wins before the break for Boston. But as we mentioned, we were setting this up as like a playoff odds thing. This is important because those five contenders we talked about earlier, as it stands now, all have 75% or higher playoff odds, right? Houston, New York, Toronto, Detroit, Seattle, Boston at around 40%. Now we're going into teams at 35% or below. And in order, that's the Rays, the Rangers at 28%, Twins 18, Guardians 16, Royals 9. And then the Angels will group in this here barely at 3% playoff odds because they are still not that far back. Now, some of these teams kind of naturally we can lump together. So how would you want to group them?
Let's do the Angels, get them out of the way really quickly, if that's okay. They're the worst of these teams. They have the worst playoff odds by far. They act irrationally all the time. They may think that they are good enough to stay in it. They have some things to trade. Yoan Moncada, Tyler Anderson, Taylor Ward, Kenley Jansen. I don't think they're going to trade Ward. He's got another year on his contract. I just don't know what they're going to do. I think they're super weird. I think a rational team would sell. They don't act rationally. That's all I really have to say about the Angels. I think you can group the three AL Central teams together. So that's Minnesota, Cleveland, and Kansas City, right? They all have playoff odds at 18% or below. None of them are catching the Tigers in the AL Central. None of them really have particularly season-changing rental pieces. I think the Twins have Willy Castro, who is super underrated. I think the Royals have Seth Lugo, who could start a playoff game. Teams are going to be interested in him. Carlos Santana for Cleveland, hilariously, would be a great fit with the Mariners. I know he hasn't been great, but that like just makes some sense. However, the compelling thing about those AL Central teams is, will they trade away their controllable players who are under contract for future seasons at the deadline this year? For the Twins, that is Yoan Duran, Griffin Jacks, Joe Ryan. For the Guardians, that is Emmanuel Clase, Stephen Kwan, and for the Royals, that is Jonathan India, Michael Garcia, Chris Bubich, and maybe Vinny Pasquantino. What do you make of this whole group?
Yeah, so this is another one where the schedule could come into play. Cleveland has won 10 of 12 since their 10-game losing streak, and they have the Royals. They go to Kansas City this weekend, so that could certainly clarify things for both teams, but then they come back home for the Rockies. So the Guardians might play their way back into not doing anything dramatic from a selling perspective. Do I think that's going to make them buyers? No. Whereas Minnesota and Kansas City, Minnesota's tough to kind of talk about because they still have this ongoing sale of the franchise in progress, and that can sometimes impact I mean, we saw it basically froze them over the offseason into doing absolutely nothing or virtually nothing. I know some of their smaller signings have ended up working out in Harrison Bader and Ty France. But for the most part, like, when a franchise is in flux like that, are they really going to trade Joe Ryan like that? I don't know. That feels like a dramatic step. Kansas City is tough. I think that they are the third. I mean, the playoff odds agree with me that they are definitely the third of this bunch, the least likely to actually make a run. But they also feel like a team that still feels like it's trending up as a franchise. And I'm not sure that they would want to subtract core pieces. I could see them being like, all right, this year is not great, but we still believe in this team. And we're going to kind of run it back with these core pieces that we already have under contract in 2026. And maybe they do trade Lugo. But other than that, I would still expect them to kind of stand pat.
Seth Lugo and a prospect for Jaren Duran would be pretty fun. Right, at a controllable outfield bat where they've gotten like no offense at all, kick the can down the road, but then you have Duran for future seasons. The two other teams in this group, Rangers and Rays. The Rays will do stuff. They do stuff. That's what the Rays do, right? They act. Now, last year, they were like four back around the deadline and they essentially sold. Randy, Isak Paredes out. They traded away a starter too, right?
Eflin.
Who am I thinking of? Eflin, thank you. I think this year they're going to thread the needle. They're going to do buying and selling. They're going to like trade away Zach Littell for someone we've never heard of. And then they're going to trade away someone we've never heard of for, you know, a bullpen arm. I just think that's where they're going to be. I would be surprised if they go all in at the deadline. One, that's not how they operate. Two, they have a sale coming up. Three, this season remains really volatile, even though they are just a half game out of the wild card because of how their stadium situation is set up, how many road games they have to play. And I think they're just not, like, this team's not going to win the World Series.
Right.
So,
yeah. No, I agree, but I still think they will do stuff, to your point. Yeah.
Yes. But the years in which the Rays like know they have a good team, they're way more aggressive at the deadline, right? Like in 21, which I think is the best Rays team of this decade, they went out and like got Nelson Cruz. Remember, like they paid stuff to go get Nelson Cruz, and he was terrible for them. He was terrible for them.
Joe Ryan, pretty good pitcher. So, believe it or not, the Rays have lost some trades. So we will see what direction that they go. But I agree with you. I don't think that they're more likely than this last team in this group, which is Texas, to be aggressive. And Texas has just been one of the strangest teams this entire season. They have this shockingly elite pitching staff. I mean, in some ways, it's not shocking. Like, you have Jacob DeGrom, sure, and he's been awesome. But for them to have as low of a team ERA as they do, and for the offense with the amount of – with the personnel that they have to be this underwhelming, Brett Boone has not fixed it, even though he knows ball and he has a podcast. This offense is still disappointing. Hey, Jordan, so I just guy, don't – yeah.
The guy who said that quote, do you remember who it was? Who said he knows ball, he has a podcast? Who was it?
Yeah, he's in AAA. It's Josh Young.
Not anymore. Called him back up. He went yard last night.
Oh, he's back. Okay. All right. Sorry. I wasn't even sure if that was an injury or anything. Sorry, Josh Young. That was not fair to you. But anyway, the point is I do view Texas as a team that could just say like, no, like we are good. We are not going. We won the World Series a couple years ago. Last year was so not fun. We don't suck. We might not be that good, but we're close enough. And these other AL teams could go in the other direction. And we don't think the Mariners are that good. And we don't think that these other AL East teams are that good. Let's go for it. Now, what does that look like? I don't really know. But I think Texas is going to act as buyers. And I'm very curious to see how that manifests.
Let's move over to the sellers. Only three teams in this group in the American League. That is Chicago, Yolo County, the Athletics, and the Baltimore Orioles. Let's begin with the easy ones, actually. Do the White Sox. They will trade anybody they can. There are two main characters here, Adrian Hauser and Luis Robert Jr. Let's start with Hauser. Kind of fell in their lap. They picked him up off the scrap heap this season with skies 10 starts or more, third lowest ERA in baseball. Adrian Houser. Okay? Outrageous. There is a team out there who would be willing to start this version of Adrian Houser in a playoff game. Like the second level of contenders. Like I could see the Giants going and getting Adrian Houser, right? Like he's going to get a not fake prospect. Now, we'll be a top 100 guy, but Adrian Houser is going to get the White Sox something. Luis Robert Jr. is a complete mystery box. Remember, I believe fifth place MVP finish in 2023. This guy was banging not that long ago. Okay. He has been buns since then. He's picked it up a little bit since June 1st. I think the OPS is at like 770-ish since then, even though none of the underlying stuff says it should be happening. Teams love the upside. Teams need center fielders. He has a $20 million team option for next year that I would be shocked if anybody picks up unless he catches absolute fire down the second half. Where do you think Luis Robert Jr. is playing in 10 days' time? Is it the White Sox or the field?
This dude's getting traded. I think he's played well enough recently. I guess I think you only slightly exaggerated his 2023, but 12th place MVP finish. But yeah, four seasons, Silver Slugger, All-Star, 38 homers, 20 steals. He still has the speed. He still has the defense. And I think that the right big market team could keep him for $20 million. Now, I don't know who that is exactly, whether that's like the Phillies. Do the Padres have enough money? I think that the Padres are a great fit for him. The Mets, sure. So I think he's getting traded. I think that the White Sox will just kind of find a taker for him at this point, especially with just like, again, there's not that much upside offensively on the market. And as volatile as he is, that's a talented baseball player. And he does still have bankable skills in the speed and the center field defense that teams could use. So I think he'll be traded somewhere. I just don't quite know where. As for Baltimore and the A's, I mean,
Let me do the A's
are
going to
trade a bunch of guys.
Let me do the A's.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the A's really quick. Camera, eyes, listener, listen. Mason Miller is not getting traded. Stop putting him in your trade propositions. Stop photoshopping him into your favorite team's uniform. He will be on the A's. He is under contract through the end of 2029. All right. I would love to see him on all of your teams. It's not happening. The A's really don't have anything to trade. Maybe Sean Newcomb or Miguel Andujar. There's not a lot there. Luis Severino would love to get traded, but he has not pitched well enough for that to happen. The Orioles, the main question there is, do they sell the controllable players or do they just sell off the rentals? They have enough rentals to get a lot back. That's Ryan O'Hearn, Cedric Mullins, Zach Eflin, Gregory Soto, Sir Anthony Dominguez. They could trade all those guys for prospects and have a nice deadline. Or they could go one step further and kind of do what the Marlins did last year, where they traded away the rentals and the controllable guys and be the main character at the deadline. Deal away Felix Bautista, Ramon Laureano, Trevor Rogers, Ryan Mountcastle, Ramon Urias, and just kind of wipe it clean and still think about competing next year. What do I think they're going to do? I think they're going to keep the pitchers, and I think they're going to trade the hitters because they have developed so much hitting over the last couple of years. Their farm system still has a bunch of interesting bats. As far as arms go, they have shown an inability to get impact pitching to the big leagues, and I would be surprised if they trade away Felix Bautista, who's one of the best relievers in the game, and Trevor Rogers, who is their best starter right now.
Yeah. The Orioles are going to still trade more players than almost any other team, I think, is still a pretty safe bet. We will see just how far they go. And I think I agree with you about the A's. What you said about Mason Miller is exactly how I felt a year ago. This year, I think there's like 5% more chance that someone is like, screw it.
We'll disagree with
Mason Miller. But I think I agree with you. All right. That is the American League. We're going to take a break. When we return, Robert Murray makes his Baseball Barbacast debut. Oh, my goodness. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbacast. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. What a treat it is to be joined by one of our favorites in the industry. He is MLB Insider for FanSided. We call him Big Bob. He is known by many names. It is Robert Murray. Robert, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, I appreciate you guys having me. A long time coming, boys. How we doing?
Oh, just hearing that Wisconsin accent brings me back to college. My college baseball coach was from Stevens Point.
Wow.
We got the pride of Sheboygan Falls here with us to talk about the deadline. We will get to the Milwaukee Brewers. We will. We promise. But we're going to start with a big picture. And this is something that I've been wondering for a while, Mr. Big Bob, is the upcoming free agent class is a little bit lighter than usual. And when you take a look at the players at the top of that class, Kyle Tucker, Pete Alonso, Alex Bregman, Framber Valdez, Kyle Schwarber, they're all on good teams and they're probably not going to get moved. That means there's probably a lighter rental market than most seasons. What do you think that means for the market at this year's deadline? And do you think it means more controllable players end up getting traded?
I don't think it's going to be overly different compared to years past. I do expect some of these controllable guys to go for sure. Like immediately that comes to mind is Mitch Keller, David Bednar, Edward Cabrera as a guy that could very likely go. There's a lot of different candidates that are going to be asked about, especially with the Guardians. Like everyone and their mothers is asking about Stephen Kwan or Emmanuel Clase. But I don't expect either one of those guys to go. But there will be controllable guys to go. And the team that everyone in baseball is watching in that regard is going to be the Pittsburgh Pirates with Keller or with Bednar or even Brian Reynolds. Like he's being asked about plenty in trade talks. I don't think he's going to go, but there's going to be a bunch of guys who go, but most of them are going to end up being of the rental variety.
Yeah. And Reynolds is an interesting name because he's having his worst season in a long time, and his financial commitment is much larger. But his track record before this season would suggest, like, all right, you can kind of bank some above average, you know, offensive production in a way that you really can't from that many other hitters available here, and he is under contract. That's why I do feel like Reynolds is a tough one. Related to this, and this is kind of what is required if you are going to, you know, trade for someone who has your controls, you got to get a little uncomfortable. You got to be willing to part with some top prospects, because that's the only way these guys are going to get moved, because all these teams have these models that tell you if you have these guys with surplus value, they are worth a lot. And so that is where it is going to require some of these front offices to get a little uncomfy. And I think my big picture question for you is, you mentioned the Pirates, maybe the Marlins, maybe Cleveland, if they, you know, lose a little bit more before the deadline, as having the pieces that teams want. There are a lot of teams and situations right now, or front offices and situations right now, where you could imagine them getting a little desperate, aggressive. I don't know how you want to phrase it. Which teams do you expect to be either in position or willing to push beyond what maybe the model tells them that they should do?
Yeah, it's a really good question. There's a good amount of contending teams at this point that kind of fit that bill for me. The Yankees are the first one that comes to mind. They're talented for sure, but they've got some problems there. And Brian Cashman has been adamant that they are going to make moves. And when he's on the record like that, he cannot miss. He's got to absolutely like go out and get those pieces, whether it's an infielder or just pitching help for both the bullpen and the starting rotation. So that to me is the team that stands out immediately. I would also look at the San Diego Padres, and AJ Preller is always aggressive this time of the year. And I'm not kidding you. He's been the GM I probably heard that's the most active in just surveying what's going on around the league. And we've seen them connected to Jaron Duran. Luis Robert Jr. makes a lot of sense. Catching help. Although, like, who are they going to get for a catcher at this point? Because Sean Murphy's not getting moved. Adley Rutschman, he's been mentioned in trade rumors, although I don't. I'm not saying that's something that Preller's going to go out and do. But my guess is if they make a move for a catcher, we're probably looking at like a Joey Bart type for them. But Preller is very aggressive, and I can see him making multiple moves, and you know he's always going to try to swing big. So we love that for AJ Preller. Yeah. I don't expect the Boston Red Sox to do anything too crazy, especially with the prices being as crazy as they are. I know the Devers trade was. Instant thought was, oh yeah, they're going to be selling come July, but they're actually in a position to buy, but they're not going to get stupid by any means.
So let me ask you about the Red Sox for a second. Like,
yeah,
they, even after trading Devers, still have this surplus of kind of in the outfield DH world where it's five guys for four spots, do you expect them to deal any of those guys away? Is the most likely move Durant going? Is it a Yoshida salary dump, or are they just going to kind of hold their cards?
Yeah, my guess is if they trade somebody, it would end up being Durant. But as of this point, I don't expect that to happen. The price is just really high. And I don't expect, I just don't expect the Red Sox to move him at this point. But if there's ever a team that could end up doing it, my guess is it's probably the Padres, just because Preller is very, like, he loves him. He loves the player. And more often than not, if AJ Preller loves a player, he'll go out and get him, whether it's, it may take him a little bit, but he's done it in the past. And Durant seems like that kind of guy that he kind of wants at this point. And he also makes sense because they can't add a huge salary at this point, and he's signed for cheap and he's signed long term. So that to me is the kind of player that they would go out and get or try to at least get.
If AJ Preller loves a player, he goes and gets him. Or in the case of Jackson Merrill, trades everybody else.
I think the only time he's ever been willing to trade him is for Ohtani, when that was a possibility for at least a cup of coffee. Well, I mean, the fact that they were involved in conversations with Soto and Ohtani, I would love to have been in that room because that was a crazy
deadline. To your point, he's always going to try. And even though they've made so many trades and the farm system has been thinned out to such a ridiculous degree, they do always have just enough to get something done. And I totally agree with you about San Diego. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on in this podcast. But I'm totally with you. I guess the last thing on just moving off of San Diego, some of those other teams that we could see be aggressive or aggressive, desperate, you know, like, because it's possible that these teams make trades that we think are reckless or, you know, like not a good baseball trade, but we're also going to commend them because we like teams to try to win. Philadelphia is a team that I feel like we're watching pretty closely there, right? You mentioned the Yankees. Houston is a team that has been aggressive when they feel like it, but how do they address a roster that has all these injuries with guys coming back? And then I guess the last team as we move to our final topic with you, which is the Brewers, is the Cubs, because this is a team that clearly is very talented. They're now in it's almost a surprise division race that we maybe didn't think they were going to have to deal with a couple months ago. You would think that Jed Hoyer would be acting with a level of urgency the same way that he did to get Kyle Tucker. So as we bring in your hometown Brewers, a team that you've covered close, let's kind of finish on that NL Central race and what you kind of expect from the Cubs and the Brewers.
Yeah. Oh, I got lots of thoughts. I'm glad you asked about this one because I'm going to start with the Cubs, and they've been very active in looking for pitching, whether it's starting pitching or bullpen help. And the bullpen it started off strong, but it's kind of come back down to earth for them, and getting or addressing both is going to be a priority for them, especially with the Brewers. I mean, they lost last night 1-0, but they were on an 11 game win streak, which is pretty remarkable for a small market team like that. But Cubs will be plenty active. And I sure as heck hope that the Brewers are going to be active because this is such a unique opportunity for them. They have the best record in baseball. And this offseason, they did not spend hardly at all. And the front office practically had to beg Mark Antanasio to spend, what was it, like $2 or $3, maybe $4 million at Jose Quintana. And the contract was even deferred as well, which is crazy.
He's been amazing.
Yeah, he's been good. And I honestly would not be surprised if he could get dealt, if I'm being totally real. I think that's a possibility. And this is such a prime opportunity for them to go out and compete in this division and actually like have a legitimate chance at winning a World Series. Because every year it seems like, except for I think it was 2018 when they were a game away from the World Series, it seems like they get to the postseason, there's all this optimism, and they get bounced early. And it's really frustrating. And if they can get maybe even another pitcher or a bat like Suarez in that lineup would be incredible. Or even like a Ryan O'Hearn type. That would make such a difference. And it wouldn't deplete their farm system by any means. I mean, it would cost a decent amount for sure. But it wouldn't be a long-term strain on the finances by any means. It would absolutely increase your chances of going out and competing for a World Series this year. Mark Antanasio, I'm telling you right now, go out and do it. Because if you're not going to do it now, then when are you going to do it? Because you have Mizorowski signed. I mean, he's looks like a stud. Freddy Peralta, you don't know if he's going to be here next year. It's just, this is the prime opportunity, and they should do it.
And so I went back and looked at their deadlines. In 2021, they had 95% playoff odds, and they acquired John Curtis and Daniel Norris. Okay?
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting here as someone who does not come from Wisconsin, has never covered the Brewers. And I'm like, if not now, when? But at the same time, like, why should we and Brewers fans believe that this is going to be any different? Is there anything about how they've operated in the last 12 months or, you know, 24 months that makes you think that this could be different?
No, honestly, no. Because I mean, in years past, they've gotten Mike Moustakas, or, and even if we're looking way back, they got CC Sabathia, and it worked
out
for them.
How'd that turn out? This is the greatest rental ever.
That's a long time ago, Robert.
Yeah, I mean, that's a heck of a pull. I might not even have been born at that time. That's crazy. it's something that they need to do. And if they do it, it would actually like reignite that fan base, or not reignite, but like it would get them even more excited than they currently are. And I'm having friends of mine from back home texting me being like, how about the Brewers? You add O'Hearn, you add Suarez or somebody. Oh, that fan base is going to go nuts. You're going to be selling out every game.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned Peralta too. I mean, he's such an important part that, you know, he's not going to probably be there forever. So I'm totally with you. And honestly, it just makes me think about another team. And we sort of alluded to them, these teams connected earlier when we talked about the American League, is Detroit. Now that's a different situation because they've been rebuilding for so long. It's not like Milwaukee where we've seen them be in postseason position and then not do anything. Detroit, we don't have that track record, but I guess that's a team I do want to finish on with you here, because in terms of what you're hearing, is that a team that is going to be willing to be more aggressive, take advantage of the opportunity in front of them? Because it's the same thing that you're saying about Milwaukee. I don't think the American League is ever going to be this bad again. And so this would seem, now Detroit's not playing very well recently either, but this would seem to be an opportunity for them, who also has a great farm system, to be aggressive. Have you heard anything about their willingness to kind of actually push for something?
I don't think it's going to end up being anything like overly crazy from Detroit, but adding pitching, I think, is going to end up being their real priority here. And I don't expect it to be like a blockbuster name by any means, but they've shown that they've been able to add names that maybe aren't like the greatest or the biggest names, but they've managed to be effective. So it kind of reminds me of the Mets in a similar way, where they can end up maximizing the value. And I've gotten just tremendous praise from around the league, just in terms of their pitching staff, or their pitching coaches, I should say, and just how good they are. So I think they're going to be aggressive on the market, but just temper expectations there. The team that I could see making a decent splash in the American League could actually be the Houston Astros, and they're looking for a bat. And we talked about them a little bit earlier. I think Ryan O'Hearn would make a lot of sense there. He would probably play in the outfield for them. That is a name that I think we should be talking about with Houston at this point.
Yeah. No, I mean, hey, Big Bob knows what's going on. So that's why we had you on. We appreciate the insight. Obviously, if you're not following by Robert Murray, if you weren't following him in June, then you would have been way late to Rafael Devers being way traded. Late. So I don't know if Robert's going to be able to break anything as big as Devers. I know he aspires to that. But we look forward to seeing what he's got.
I just want to ask you very, very quickly about this. You spend so much time, effort, energy, like trying to break these stories, these news nuggets, trades, signings, whatever. Is the Devers one the one that you're most proud of? Like, is there one from your career that you look back on and you're like, that's the feather in my cap? If you could like get it framed in a way, you know, like on the mantle behind you, think about yourself as like an artist dropping songs, right? Was that the one that you take the most pride in?
Yeah, that'd probably be my top hit if I'm being honest. Yeah, because the one previously was Fernando Tatis's extension. Like that was a big one. Yeah. And I remember I was at home. I was making dinner with my mom when I broke that one, and we both went nuts. And all of a sudden, for Devers, I'm not kidding you. It was a relaxing day for me. It was Father's Day, and next thing I know, I'm sitting on my couch, pet my dog Cooper, and I get a call, and the guy answer. And start talking, and he tells me, like, dude, shut up. And I'm like, what are we talking about here? Like, what's going on? And he said, Devers is getting traded to the Giants in exchange for Harrison and Hicks and Moore. I'm like, no, you're kidding with me. I send one text just to be like, okay, I'll try. He's like, yeah, it's right. I'm like, wait, what? And I text another, or I call somebody else, and there's silence on the other end of the line. And he's like, yeah. And I ask him five different times, is this right? And he said, yes, like tweet it. and I do, and I'm not kidding you. If Bobby and Ardaya text me immediately being like, are you hacked? Please, like, please tell me you're not hacked. And I have right. So many executives text me. Yeah. And it's just asking, is this real? It was crazy. And nobody was confirming it for like 10 minutes. And I knew it was right, but I'm like, what the heck is going on here? But it was such an adrenaline rush. And I absolutely enjoyed that rest of that night. I was riding that high, and now I'm trying to top that one, but easier.
No, the reason that one was so good, the reason that one was so good is because it was on no one's radar, right? Like, there was like no rumblings, there was no rumors, there was no buzz. It was just like, Robert Murray says the Devers on the Giants now. And it was like, okay.
It was crazy. Yeah. And I mean, people doubted it. I'm like, I can't blame him. As you said, it was on nobody's radar. And then, it was bonkers, but I'm not kidding you. When I say it's changed my life. It's changed my career. And I'm very thankful for that. And, but we got a lot of work to do because I want to be the best.
Absolutely. And Robert, as someone, as we've known you for a few years, like, news breaking is the opposite of what we aspire to do, but it also means we can appreciate because we know what it takes to go into that. And as someone who, I won't say who, although you know, I've watched Robert almost break some massive news at the winter readings a couple years ago and missed it by like 30 seconds. I know how hard he's working, and we're rooting for you, man, because this is a ridiculous industry, and you've earned it. So good luck over these next week. We'll let you go so you can go chase down some more scoops. But thank you for the time, everyone. Follow Robert Murray. I know you guys got a lot of content coming out at that deadline time. So make sure you give Robert a follow on all the relevant social accounts, and we'll do this again soon, my man.
No, let's make it happen. I just want to say before we close off, boys, I want to say thank you for support. You guys have been believers in me before many people, and I just want to say thank you for that. And I'll never forget that. So I appreciate you both.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Thank you to Bob Murray for joining us. National League, there's a whole other set of teams. This is a long podcast, but now's the time to do it. Yeah?
It's a whole other, there's 15 more teams?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. This is, whew, what a chore. Just kidding. I'm having a great time. Let's talk about the buyers in the National League. And we begin with a absolutely terrible baseball team that is the Los Angeles Dodgers, who embarrassed themselves once again on Tuesday night. Edgardo Henriquez with a wonderful throwing error to throw the game away as Shohei Ohtani continues to blow our minds and the Dodgers continue to lose. But good news, Fangraphs is unbothered by the Dodgers' current skid as they still have 99% playoff odds, which I wholeheartedly agree with. That said, because of the latest wave of injuries, which includes Tanner Scott and now Ben Kasperius, I mean, they're truly dropping by the day at this point. This team is going to need pitchers, Jake Mintz. What a freaking surprise. And it is quite, it's amazing, right? Andrew Friedman spends all this money. He says, well, guys, we got to bring in all these free agent pitchers so that we don't have to trade away prospects at the deadline. I mean, that's the point, right? That's why we're doing this. Well, guess what? They are going to need even more pitching than they did a year ago. And Michael Kopech and Jack Flaherty were very, very important. Like, they probably aren't winning the World Series without those two guys. I know they weren't their best pitchers, but they did end up absolutely needing them. I know Tommy Edman was an even bigger part of last year's deadline. But they are going to need pitchers. I think that is still going to be the priority. I know some of their hitters have not been living up to their high standards, but I think that for the most part, that the focus is going to be on the mound for the Dodgers.
They are not entering October with Alex Vesia, Kirby Yates, Alexis Diaz, Ben Kasperius, Anthony Bonda, Edgardo Henriquez, Jack Dreyer, Will Klein, and Dustin May. That's not the bullpen. It's just not. Now, do they get a starter? I don't know. So if the playoffs were tomorrow, the rotation would probably be Yamamoto, Glasnow, Ohtani to Emmett Sheehan, and then the return of Blake Snell, right? With Kershaw in there somewhere. I think they're probably content enough with that. That's surely going to change between now and the first game of the playoffs. Someone else is going to get hurt or come back or whatever. I think they're happy enough with that they don't need to get a playoff starter. And this bullpen is just such a catastrophe that they really do need more reinforcements there. They could use a utility man just because Max Muncy and Enrique Hernandez are out right now, and they're a little thin on the position player side, but I don't think that that's a must. Anything else on LA before we move to the Cubs?
No, it's just amazing that this is where they are. I mean, again, like, yeah, we were like, oh, 120 wins. It's like, yeah, if they go undefeated the rest of the way. Actually, I literally don't even think they can get to 120 anymore. So, amazing sequence of events, but we should stop being surprised that this is how the Dodgers seasons go.
Cubs.
Now, the Cubs. Feeling a little bit better today than yesterday because the Brewers finally lost, getting shut out in Seattle on Tuesday. However, they got to be sweating it a little bit. And they know that this is not, they are not going to coast to a division title here. And so because of that, I think that while this is still a team that has, and by the way, Matthew Boyd reminding us that, like, hey guys, I'm an all-star starting pitcher. And you can keep discounting me as a playoff starter, but I'm having the best year of my career and you should feel
he's
confident.
He's a playoff starter.
And that's fine. That's fine. Right. Okay. He's so not the problem. The question is, you go him and Imanaga, that's the question. Is there someone, if we know that Justin Steele's not coming back this year, Tyon hurt, Assad still hurt, Colin Ray is doing his best, Cade Horton has looked better as a rookie, it still feels like this is a team that's going to be trying to pay big for an impact starting pitcher.
And Seth Lugo makes a lot of sense here. There is no team, in my opinion, no buyer with higher stakes. Kyle Tucker, free agent at the end of the year. Jed Hoyer, the president of baseball operations, his contract is up. He is on the hot seat. If the Cubs do not make the playoffs this year, he is absolutely gonzo. So you have to remember the motivations that are pushing the people who are making the decisions. And I think that that is really relevant in regards to the Cubs. Let's move on to the Phillies and the Mets, who I think we can group together because their needs are the same. They need relievers. They need relievers, relievers, and more relievers. Both of these teams, I think, feel pretty good about their position player groups, but don't have enough arms in the late innings. They have had injuries. They have had suspensions in regards to Jose Alvarado. They have had underperformance. And I think that it's reasonable to expect reinforcements to come. Now, the difference between the Phillies and the Mets is that the Phillies are led by Dave Dombrowski, who is very aggressive. He is going to add a reliever. Which of the guys on the market do you think makes sense for Philadelphia?
Yeah, I mean, Dombrowski is, I think, an absolute main character at this deadline. I think, you know, we know they just signed David Robertson, so he'll help at some point in August. Would they be willing to fast-track Gage Wood? I wouldn't put it past them, considering how quickly they've pushed some of the other guys like Kirkering. But I do think we'll see, are they willing to go out and get like a Clase, or if that guy becomes available, or Duran, Griffin Jacks from Minnesota? Do they have the prospects to get a deal done for someone who isn't a rental like a Ryan Helsley or a Fairbanks? I don't know. It's going to be someone. I do wonder with Philadelphia if the outfield is something they would consider also addressing. The Max Kepler situation has clearly not gone as planned, and we know that just the offense from the outfield spots has just not, I mean, it's just been bad. I mean, they just haven't got a lot of production from that. So I know it's less of a priority than the bullpen, but I do wonder if they are maybe more interested in a bat than we maybe thought.
And the one thing about Philadelphia, right, is that the window's closing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Way more than the Mets.
Yeah. Yeah. And but I mean, right. I agree with that. So I think the urgency, like, Stearns probably feels like he can be a little bit more measured. But I don't know, man. Like, the Mets should still be trying to win the division. Like, come on. Like, you're still, of course, you just give Juan Soto $800 million. Like, I don't know. I wouldn't. But I do think, just based on what we know on how these guys usually act, I do think it's more likely that they play it cool. Whereas Dombrowski's like, you know, F them kids. We're trading these prospects.
Yeah. And if Pete Alonso hits free agency again this year, that's a big bat out the door. The time to win in Queens is now. And I do think that Stearns will be more aggressive than he was last season. Let's do the Padres now, who are the ultimate stars and scrubs Major League Baseball team. The top of their order is outstanding. The bottom of it is an absolute shanda. They lost last night. This is an amazing, like, the perfect encapsulation of the bottom of the Padres offense last night. Down 3-1 in the ninth against the Marlins. 4-1 in the ninth, excuse me, against the Marlins. And they go walk, double, double. And it's like one run game, runner on second, no outs. Here comes the bottom of the lineup. And it's just like poof, poof, poof. Trenton Brooks, pinch hit, pop out. The San Diego Padres need really two things, in my opinion. They need a catcher. And catchers get dealt so rarely at the deadline because of all that goes into catching in the modern game. But them rolling out Elias Diaz and Martin Maldonado as a platoon that should just, you know, the AARP platoon is not a viable path forward. If you go war by position this season, I believe the Padres catchers have accumulated the fewest war. Yes, -0.8, according to Baseball Reference. So that's a need. And then the other need is just like an adult hitter at the bottom of the lineup. And they can put that guy at DH. They can put him in left field.
Yeah. Because Gavin Sheets has been a good story, but he has not been a good hitter for like 2 months now. And he still has a place on this roster as like a lefty bench bat. But him being in the lineup every day, let alone giving regular at-bats to Iglesias and Tyler Wade and Trenton Brooks, like it's not anywhere close to good enough. And the rest of this lineup is not so good that you can afford it in a way that like a team, honestly, like the Yankees, right? Like if you have Aaron Judge and you have, I know the Padres have some really good hitters, but the bottom of this lineup has just cost them too much. So Preller, you know, kind of in the same way as DePoto, like he's going to do something. He's going to try to do something. Does he have, but unlike DePoto, he does not have a loaded farm system to deal from. That said, Preller gets stuff done. So I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know what catcher could realistically be available to fix this midseason if it's not Sean Murphy. And I don't think they have what it takes to trade for Sean Murphy. So I don't know. They are a mystery box, but as always, every year, I can't wait to see what the Padres do.
Who do the Padres love trading with, Jordan, more than anybody else?
Seattle. I mean, Tampa Bay Rays. With a lot of people. Oh yeah,
Danny Jansen, San Diego Padre. Perfect. Like the Rays, sure. Like he's worth $10 million. They'll eat some of the deal. They'll get a guy we've never heard of. Like Danny Jansen is like the perfect thread the needle Rays move right there.
The Rays are going to have to figure out their catching too at some point. That has been a huge weak spot for them also. And I know Danny Jansen hasn't exactly been the fix. All right. Last obvious buyer, although we also don't know what they are going to do. And that's Milwaukee. They did finally lose last night. They, to us, are in the same bucket as Detroit, although we have seen Milwaukee be in a playoff spot at the deadline multiple times over the last half decade. Unlike Detroit, we haven't seen them go heavy, heavy all in. I don't know, because on one hand, they're probably like, we don't need to do anything dramatic. Whatever weird stuff we're doing is working. At the same time, as we just talked about, like there's still not a roster that terrifies you come October, as impressive as it is what they're doing. So is this a year they finally decide to they also have a great farm? I don't think so. I think they're just going to keep on doing Brewers stuff.
In 2021, they had 95% playoff odds at the deadline, and they acquired John Curtis and Daniel Norris, right? They are not a push the chips in team. That is not how this front office operates, and that is not how they are going to operate this year. I would be floored and shocked if they did anything remotely drastic. I think they'll add a bat in the like Josh Bell category, you know?
Yep.
Like, yeah. He feels like an obvious Carlos Santana again, right? But I don't think that anybody with a recent all-star appearance is going to be on the Milwaukee Brewers in 10 days that isn't currently on the team. I don't really have much. And like, you could imagine them, you would say, oh, they need a depth starter, but like their rotation's been amazing and they have whatever the hell Nestor Cortez is coming back relatively soon. Let's move on to the messy middle in the National League, which we have as four teams. That is the Giants, the Cardinals, the Reds, and the Diamondbacks. Let's group the Reds and the Giants together, even though their playoff odds are like kind of big gap. Giants at 32, Reds at 9. They're only a game apart in the standings. As it currently stands, And I think when it's all said and done, both of these teams just kind of stand pat and don't really add a whole lot to their rosters or subtract from them.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. I kind of view Cincinnati sort of in the same way as Kansas City, where it's like, we still feel good about where we're trending, but maybe this year isn't the year. Now, that said, the Reds haven't exactly earned like patience from their fan base. Again, this is the team that hasn't won a playoff series since we have been alive. So this is, you would think, a team that would be acting with urgency that has Terry Francona as manager. But I think I agree with you. As for San Francisco, I mean, let's see what Buster Posey has cooking up. We know he made this massive swing for Devers. It's not like we're expecting him to do anything remotely resembling that again. But they are still close enough that I don't see Buster Posey just like hanging out and thinking that they're good enough. So I don't know what that looks like, but that just doesn't seem like how they're operating and how he is able to execute a deal in this interesting season where you have so many teams stuck in the middle here. That will be very interesting. They also just haven't been playing that well. So I don't see Buster Posey deciding, not that they have a ton really to sell anyway. I don't know. That feels like a pretty big wild card also in every sense of the word, because Buster Posey, like, who knows?
That's true. The Giants also have a bad farm system, and their best piece, Bryce Eldridge at the top, is not going anywhere. Like the Red Sox asked for him in the Devers trade, and if you're not going to include him in the Devers trade, he's not going anywhere. And so for that reason, I just don't think the Giants are going to be able to acquire anything of impact at this year's deadline. But again, Buster Posey has shocked us before. Let's do the Cardinals and the Diamondbacks now. And let's start with the Diamondbacks, because they are the main characters of the deadline. They are the ones holding the keys. They are just flush with impending free agents in a year that does not have many guys hitting free agency. These expiring contracts are Gino Suarez, Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, Josh Naylor. I would say Suarez and Naylor are the two best rental bats available. Gallen and Merrill are both capable of starting a playoff game. Shelby Miller, James McCann, Randall Grichuk are all depth pieces that could be on a playoff roster. James McCann has been weirdly good. He's another dude that the Padres should just try out at catcher, right? Like, why not? Just what the hell?
Yeah.
The Diamondbacks, tough loss last night. They're down 5.5 in the wild card, down 9 in the NL West, 13% playoff odds. It feels like they're going to sell. Just a fascinating, fascinating situation for Arizona.
Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about them for weeks, and I think that they probably wish they had more clarity by now. Their schedule leading up to the deadline is, again, they got this last game against Houston. On the road, they got a 9-game road trip through the deadline at Pittsburgh, at Detroit, at the A's. So I don't know. We'll see what I know. Pittsburgh's beating up on the Tigers this week, so maybe they're playing a little bit better. I just have no idea. But because they have all these guys, I guess I just hope that it's one or the other. I hope that they don't just like only trade one of them and like try to win. Like, do it or don't. If you want to just keep this group together and because you have this awesome offense, try to go for it, fine. God bless. I'm not going to get mad at a team like Arizona for trying to win. That's fine. But if you're going to trade one of them, just do it all. Reload. You still have a decent core to build around. Of course, you're going to have to get more pitching next year at some point regardless. So I hope that this is not a half measure in either direction.
I'm most interested to see if they group these guys in trades to try and up the level of return, right? If I give you Gino Suarez and I give my little sister Zach Gallen, I'm going to get less from each of you than if I give you, Jordan, multiple players. I could get a better prospect back if you're going for high end instead of kind of like you're going to get a better return. So I'm interested to see how they package that. Let's move over to the Cardinals, who I think are in a really fascinating spot because of who's in charge. Remember, what are the motivations of the people making the decisions? This is the final year for head honcho John Mozeliak. His last year in charge before he hands the reins of the Cardinal way over to Chaim Bloom, Javier of the show. I think they should sell, and I think they ultimately will. I think Ryan Helsley, Phil Maton, Steven Matz, could all help teams out of the bullpen. But like, does John Mozeliak want to sell at his last deadline? Does he want his legendary executive tenure to end with a poof and not a bang, right? Does he want to spend the last 2 months of this major league life watching pointless baseball? Maybe. Maybe the forces above him and around him are strong enough to push him in that direction. But I just remain a little bit more skeptical than most about the Cardinals being full sellers.
I think that this has been overrated. I just think that this transition has already been ongoing. Mozeliak's legacy is not going to be defined by the season either way.
True.
I don't think it's that important. It's very different than other Probos who are on the hot seat and are like trying to save their job. Like, I just don't think it's that important. I think if their playoff odds go down even a little bit more, I think that they're going to trade all these rental guys and they're going to do that. So are they good? And because again, like the, oh, go out with a bang. I just don't think this team's, even the best version of this team has a good, even if they snuck in, this is not a team that resembles a real threat in October. So I still expect them to sell. Will it be as dramatic as some of these other teams? No. But I think Helsley will be on the move. I think Matz will be on the move. And Fetty, they probably thought they were going to get something for, but that has obviously not been going super awesome lately. So we will see. We will see. But I don't think that the front office dynamics are going to impact it that much.
Let's fly through the NL sellers. These are pretty straightforward. The Atlanta Braves, what a bad season for them. What's important to keep in mind about the Braves, they will sell. They are not trading away anything that's going to help the 2026 team. Simple as. I think Sean Murphy could get dealt this offseason. I think trading a big piece at catcher like that in the middle of the year, just there's too many complications around it. And I think if they do trade him, they'll do it over the winter. So what does that mean? That means Marcelo Zuna, Raisel Iglesias, Rafael Montero, Pierce Johnson. Those are the expiring contracts. I think they all go. Ozuna's a weird one because he's been horrible. I think he's the ninth worst qualified hitter in baseball since June 1. Like, he has been horrendous. He's playing through an injury. He comes with all the off-the-field baggage. Like, someone will trade for him because someone will think of him as an upgrade. Like, the Padres, dude, feel like a kind of an obvious place for him. Like, teams that need bats, like, someone will, like, Ozuna's not spending the last 2 months of the year on the Braves.
Logically, there's no reason for them to keep him. And maybe you're right that someone will take on the money. But it's not a Luis Robert where it's like, man, this guy can't hit right now, but at least he's playing a damn good center field. He's bringing nothing else. So if you're giving him DH at bats, you better be actually, you want to designate him to hit, he better be hitting. So I think I agree with you, though. I do think that obviously the Braves still believe that this is just a cursed season and they will get back to contending in 2026. So I don't think that they will be a team we're talking about that much unless they do try and trade Murphy. But that's why I think that the Marlins and the Pirates, like the Nats and the Rockies, are bad. They don't have a lot of players that make sense to move in terms of rentals that are going to make a huge impact. We don't think they're going to trade their controllable players because the Nationals, I just think that they also think that they're close enough to winning that keeping Mackenzie Gore makes sense. And the Rockies operate on a different plane of existence. And I don't mean that in a good way. So I think Miami and Pittsburgh are the two other teams that, if they want to be the main character at this deadline, alongside Arizona, are absolutely the teams to watch. And that is because the Pirates are, man, I mean, it is bleak for a million reasons. Is Ben Cherington going to still have a job at the end of the season? I don't know, but he's still in charge at this deadline where they have pieces that they could move that are not rentals that they could get a lot for. That is Mitch Keller. That is maybe David Bednar. Ke'Bryan Hayes, does he have a lot of trade value? I don't know, but to a team like the Yankees, probably. And then Miami, it's the same thing. You know, vibes have been great for the Fish, but their playoff odds are still 0.5%. And so I think Peter Bendix could still look at it rationally and say, listen, we have something good going here, but if we can get a ton of guys that are going to help us soon for Edward Cabrera or Sandy Alcantara or Jesus Sanchez, like, I think they're going to trade them. So the Marlins and Pirates, I do think we'll be talking a lot about over the next week.
All right. Those are all the baseball teams. That's it. Those are the traders. Traders.
I look forward to finding out what we got horrifically wrong, because guess what? You can't predict ball. There's always a couple moves that are just like, what? What are they? What, where did this come from? That guy was available. I had no idea. He had 5 years of team control left. So that will happen. That's what makes it fun. And that's why you should tune in to our trade deadline special at 5:30 p.m. Eastern leading up to the deadline on Thursday, July 31st. Make sure you're tapped in there. Of course, we have a few more shows before then, but we are looking forward to seeing what the deadline gives us. I know we had some other stuff from around the league. We got Devers playing first. Rich Hill's back. Oh my God, is he going to get traded to a 15th team? That would be amazing. But we're going to end this podcast here. Thank you to Robert Murray, Big Bob, for joining us. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and TJ Brassel for producing. Jake Mintz, final thoughts before we say goodbye.
We once had a conversation about the best and worst times to die. For a baseball fan, right? The idea, like, when do you want your consciousness to no longer exist? And I, after doing this preview, this is a tough week to go because I want to know where all these players are going to end up. I want to know how teams are going to operate. So, big man upstairs, if you're going to take me August 2nd, okay? So that I can do the trade deadline preview show on deadline day.
What a lovely place to end. Thank you all for listening. Goodbye.
Literally.